From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Tuesday, May 17th, 2016. We are so honored that you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon. Once again, we've got a great show in store for all of you out there throughout this entire hour. Well, today's Current Sports, we will invite Bob Every, who is, of course, the director of the Softball Classic here in Mid-Michigan and the chairman of the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame. The Softball Classic got underway at Rainey Park yesterday at 5 p.m. and 7 p.m. Two games took place. We'll tell you the outcome of how both of those matchups turned out. And also, there will be round one matchups today as well. So you don't want to miss that at all. Bob will join us via phone. We will also talk about the Detroit Tigers as they topped the Minnesota Twins last night. And Tigers manager Brad Ausmus just lost it, folks. Yeah, in an epic tirade. All right, we'll tell you about that. Also, we'll give you a preview of the NBA draft lottery, which takes place tonight. Also, new details concerning former Michigan State hoop star Mateen Cleaves and, of course, his sexual assault case. And a bomb was dropped this morning, folks, and you definitely want to hear about this one. Also, later on this hour, we will chat about the Michigan State football team as they get a big get for their roster. And we'll have Tickle Tuesday for you. All of that and so much more. Call in to be a part of today's show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, we begin things with giving you an update on what took place at the Softball Classic yesterday. The DeWitt Panthers opened up the Greater Lansing Hall of Fame Softball Classic with a 7-0 victory over Eden Rapids at Rainey Park. Courtney Simpson was absolutely fantastic. She struck out 5 and allowed just 6 hits in a complete game shutout victory. Grand Ledge in the second game rallied to a 12-7 victory over Mason. And get this, the Comets have now won 22 straight games. And get this, in that loss column, a big donut exists. That's right, they are 22-0 on the year. Again, folks, keep it locked right here. We'll be chatting with the director of the Hall of Fame Softball Classic, Bob Every, in just a moment. You don't want to miss that chat. All right. News concerning Mateen Cleaves this morning, folks. The prosecution dropped huge news during a hearing in the sexual assault case against the former basketball star. There may be another person willing to come forward. Genesee County Special Prosecutor Lisa Lindsay said her office received information that there is another alleged victim and asked for the opportunity to revisit bond in the case after Cleaves' June 28th preliminary examination, when a video tied to the case is expected to be played in court. Now, Cleaves, who is 38 years old, is accused of sexually assaulting a woman in a motel near Flint, Michigan last year and has been charged with multiple felonies. After the first round of the NCAA Regionals, the Michigan State men's golf team stands 12th, carding a 318. The Stillwater Regional is being held at the par 72, 7,418-yard Karsten Creek Golf Club. The Spartans are returning to NCAA Regionals for the first time since 2009, when Michigan State also played in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Host Oklahoma State leads the way, carding a 3-under, 285. Michigan State football head coach Mark D'Antonio announced on Monday that defensive tackle Kevin Williams from Ohio has signed a valid Big Ten tender and will join the Spartan program for the upcoming season. Williams has spent the past 5 years with Nebraska, Williams received a sixth year of eligibility from the NCAA last November due to knee injuries, which prevented him from playing in 2011 and 2013. He graduated from Nebraska with a bachelor's degree in management in August of 2014 and earned his master's degree in construction engineering and management in May of this year. The Michigan State baseball team travels to Mount Pleasant to take on Central Michigan University in the final non-conference game of the regular season today. First pitch will be at 4:05 p.m. and sophomore Andrew Gonzalez will get the ball for the Spartans. MSU is 33-15 overall and has defeated CMU in both matchups between the two teams so far this season. The Detroit Tigers lost an 8-run lead after the first inning and lost their manager in a fourth-inning tirade. But they rallied with a go-ahead home run from who other than Nick Castellanos, the hottest man, the hottest hitter in the American League, to take a 10-8 win from the Twins last night at home at Comerica Park. Now, a called third strike on Castellanos in the bottom half of the fourth sent Ausmus into a frenzy that saw him throw his hoodie, yes, his hoodie, over home plate. Mike Pelfrey, who is 0-4 on the year with a 5.80 ERA, will continue his search for his first win as a Tig by taking on his former team. Pelfrey delivered arguably his best outing of the season with 5 2/3 innings of two ball, last Thursday at Baltimore against the Orioles, but picked up a no decision when the O's rallied off of course, Detroit's bullpen. Sad news in the world of Detroit Tigers lore, folks. Dick McAuliffe, who grew up in Farmington and was a World Series champion with the Detroit Tigers, he sadly passed away on Friday. McAuliffe was 76 years old, was living in Farmington. The Detroit Tigers held a moment of silence for McAuliffe before Monday's game against the Twins. McAuliffe made his major league debut in 1960 as a shortstop for the Tigers and finished his career as a third baseman for the Boston Red Sox back in 1975. He was a three-time All-Star and a World Series champion back in 1968, and he hit a home run against the St. Louis Cardinals in Game 3 of the World Series. Dick McAuliffe, dead at the age of 76. All right, folks, and last but not least, the order for the 2016 NBA Draft will be set tonight. That's right, tonight. The hopes of many teams' dreams could come true, and 13 teams are hoping for a lucky draw to move up the board. Now, the 2016 NBA Draft Lottery will begin tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and can be seen on ESPN just before the first game of the Eastern Conference Finals between, of course, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Toronto Raptors. The Philadelphia 76ers have the best odds of landing the number one pick at 25%, followed by the LA Lakers at 19.9%, the Boston Celtics at 15.6%, the Phoenix Suns at 11.9%, the Minnesota Timberwolves at 8.8%, the New Orleans Pelicans, Isaac, at 6.3%, and the Denver Nuggets at 4.3%. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open. Call in to be a part of today's show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Without further ado, let the show begin.
Ballpark, he's definitely a home run threat.
This one well hit. Willie Mays is going back, way back to the warning track, and leaps and can't get it. Home run. There it is, a home run for Dick McAuliffe. Dick McAuliffe has just made this a 5-3 ball game.
1-0, Tigers lead. They got that run in the opening inning. The man who scored is up there now waiting on a 3-2 pitch from John. Watch out. That one just about hit him. I think Max a little perturbed. He's yelling Tommy John. Now he goes at him, and John tackles for Collin. Here comes Pete Ward in, Mickey Stanley. Salerno's there in the middle, and both dugouts empty, and the teams are going at it. Gates Brown is out there, and now the umpires are trying to separate the combatants here, and I think the situation has been still. John, I believe, has hurt his arm.
Welcome to today's Current Sports. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. Happy, happy Tuesday, ladies and gents, boys and girls. We've got a fantastic hour in store for your ears. Again, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, and we would like to dedicate today's show to one of the greats in Detroit Tigers history, Dick McAuliffe. As I mentioned in our Current Sports quick hit headliners, passed away on Friday at the age of 76. Dick McAuliffe, he was a second baseman, a part of that 1968 Detroit Tigers World Championship team. His name, peep this, was actually Mad Dog. Yeah, dig that, right? It was the nickname teammates had given him fairly early in a Tigers career that began in 1960 and stretched through the 1973 season, during in which McAuliffe batted, what, 249, 192 home runs, and a pretty sizable 753 OPS. Solid numbers for a shortstop who later moved to second base. He will certainly be missed. And, you know, moments like this, again, I was born in 1990, right? And, you know, growing up, I was always around my grandfather, who would always tell me of some of the great athletes of the past. Some of the athletes he would talk about were of the likes of, like, Muhammad Ali. You know, he talked a lot about boxing. He was a big boxing guy, but he was also a big baseball fanatic growing up as well. And he always would mention the Detroit Tigers teams of the past, of course, the Bless You Boys period back in the 80s. And he always would even go further back and talk about the 60s teams as well. And I remember him mentioning Dick McAuliffe very briefly when I was growing up, and how good that team was. Yeah. And, you know, it's so interesting when doing research about the life of McAuliffe and what he was just as a player. I mean, this is a dude who was a fierce competitor. And, you know, he was not only known for his competitive drive and ferocity, really, on the, you know, at bat, but at the same time, he also had an interesting stance when he went to hit as well. And this is coming from a great article in the Detroit News written by the one, the only, Lynn Henning. And I just want to read a quick excerpt from that article. Quote, as much as his feistiness, McAuliffe's left-handed batting stance was particular to his baseball DNA, beautifully described by analyst Bill James in his classic series, The Baseball Abstract. And this is how Bill James describes the stance of McAuliffe. Quote, he tucked his right wrist under his chin, and he held his bat over his head, so it looked as if he were dodging the sword of Damocles in mid-descent. He pointed his left knee at the catcher and his right knee at the pitcher and spread the two as far apart as humanly possible, his right foot balanced on his toes so that to have lowered his heel 2 inches would have pulled his knee inward by a foot. Talk about detail, right? Dick McAuliffe dead at the age of 76, and it is reported that his death followed a battle with Alzheimer's. So he certainly will be missed, and I'm sure we have a lot of listeners out there that know about the legacy of Dick McAuliffe, that know about the legacy of that World Championship Detroit Tigers team of the 60s, and we encourage you all to call in and share your memories. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Before moving forward, I do understand that we do have a caller right now on line one. It's our dear friend, Kirk, from Grand Ledge. Kirk, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing fine, Al. A little saddened by the loss of Dick McAuliffe. You know, the description of his stance was accurate, but the way I always remember it was his left foot was like parallel with the back line of the batter's box, and his right foot was 90 degrees perpendicular to his right foot, pointed right at the pitcher.
That is so weird. That's a weird stance.
You cannot say Dick McAuliffe to anyone of that era without them thinking of that stance.
Right, right.
I mean, but, you know, a couple memories. I was 9 years old in the summer of 1968, and the first Tiger baseball game I went to, I was sitting in the right field upper deck, and the first home run I saw, Dick McAuliffe hit it, and it landed about 10 rows in front of where I was sitting.
My God. Talk about a memory, right? My goodness.
Yeah, it was something else. The other thing is you played that clip of his brawl with Tommy John.
Exactly, yes.
What people don't quite remember about that is that brawl led to the injury that Tommy John got that led to Tommy John surgery.
So you're telling me, again, because you hear Tommy John surgery brought up all the time with pitchers who have exhausted their respective arm to try and get back on the mound. That injury,
in which Tommy John,
that was the aftermath of that brawl in which he had that surgery? Oh,
yeah.
My God, you have to be kidding me. Oh, yeah, my goodness, Kurt.
That surgery comes from a ruptured tendon in your elbow, ulnar tendon, I think, or something like that. And Tommy John got injured that tendon in that brawl, and didn't pitch again until after he had that surgery.
Wow. What a story. Well, thank you for that tidbit of information, Kirk. Really appreciate that. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Dick McAuliffe was the leadoff hitter for that 68 team, and, you know, we often think of leadoff hitters as being fast guys and stuff like that. McAuliffe was quick, but he wasn't fast. But that team, I think Mickey Stanley stole 9 bases to lead that team that year. The rest of that team, everybody was home run hitter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they basically played kind of Earl Weaver baseball, you know, get guys on base and wait for the 3-run homer. And then, of course, you had McLean and Lolich and those guys pitching. But, I'll never forget that year. That was an amazing year. There were so many things related to that 68 team after the loss in 67 on the last day of the season, after the riots in 67. And McAuliffe was just another one of the characters that was on that team. So it's kind of a sad day for me.
Definitely. Well, Kurt, we appreciate you calling in and sharing that memory. That was fantastic. Thanks so much, Kurt.
Take care, Al. Bye.
Call in, folks, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And I'm sure, Isaac, that many Detroit Tigers fans out there are wishing that they could rewind the hands of time and just really live in that era to see what it was like to watch a Detroit Tigers team win a World Series, because it's been a long time. It's been, again, since the Bless You Boys period. And, you know, it's kind of an easy segue here into the Detroit Tigers conversation to lead our show, because the Detroit Tigers, they are in the midst of a home series against the lowly, and I do mean lowly, Minnesota Twins. And they pulled off the win. It was not easy last night. We saw 18 runs total last night. So if you love offense, you loved last night's game as the Detroit Tigers were able to top the Minnesota Twins 10-8. And we saw a moment in the fourth, which I recounted in our Quick Hit Headliners, in which Tigers manager Brad Ausmus, who many believe is on the hot seat right now, he completely lost his mind on a called third strike on Nick Castellanos in the bottom half of the fourth. Ausmus goes out into the field, and he just completely gives it to the umpire, is in his face. He called Nick Castellanos back and said, hey, I got this. And, you know, in a blaze, again, he was ejected from the game, and in a blaze, he took off his hoodie and put it right on home plate. You know, it's always amazing, Isaac, that whenever we see, you know, my managers go off in the game of baseball, it's always fun to watch, because you know something out of the ordinary is going to happen. Usually when a manager gets ejected and they decide to go out on the field, you know that you aren't just going to see an argument take place. You're going to see an argument and maybe a few props thrown out. You know, you're going to see something extra that you normally don't see, as opposed to any other sport. So this was really the first time that we saw Tigers manager Brad Ausmus erupt in a rage like this? And maybe it's been just a culmination of what this man has been going through in recent weeks with the Detroit Tigers not playing up to par, playing below expectations. He's hearing the chatter about his job on the line. And, you know, a lot of people forget that when you talk about somebody's job, I mean, this is how this dude makes a living. And he's not like the average Joe out here. If you or I or anyone out there in the corporate world, if they have a job and their job is on the line, is not publicized on the front page of the local paper. We forget that this is a man's livelihood that we are talking about. And a lot of people are cruel out there. You know what I mean? This is how the dude gets his check, all right? And you're calling for his head. So, you know, yeah, I'm always conscious and sensitive to the fact with that. But I think that what we saw last night was just a culmination of emotion that just boiled over the top. And, you know, Nick Castellanos, you know, he came out and said after the game that he liked the emotion that, you know, that Brad Ausmus showed during that fourth inning. He went on to say, quote, as a player, sometimes when you see your manager do that, it's like, man, he's got my back. When he comes and protects me like that, it's like, all right, you went to battle for me. I'm going to battle for you now. That's what it's all about. So clearly the Tigers from, again, it's just one player commenting on the tirade, but, you know, I don't think that Ausmus has lost the clubhouse in that regard when he goes out there and just loses his mind. It kind of shows as a symbol that, hey, I'm still fighting for you guys, even if I may be out the door pretty soon.
No, players love it, and I can say that from personal experience when their coach or their manager goes off on the referees.
Right,
because
right.
You've got your manager go off on you so much, especially if you're in the Tigers' place, whether you think it's Ausmus's fault or it isn't, the Tigers themselves have not been playing well this year. They've had plenty of locker room screaming sessions. So to see Ausmus take it out on the referee or the umpire after he made a bad call, that's what the players want to see. They want to see that the manager, he's judicious, he's got their back, and he's fair with all of his criticisms. And that's the thing with Ausmus. Ausmus went out there, he attacked who deserved to be attacked, and yesterday we actually talked about how baseball fights, the brawls in baseball, are the best in all of sports. Baseball ejections are also the best, because there's always that little twing of comedy to them. You've always got the use of props, and it's never out of pure frustration or anger. It's always a little bit fun. So seeing Ausmus throw down his sweatshirt, that was a good time last night. It definitely added a little life to the game, although 18 runs, that didn't need any more life.
And you know, and this is my next point. This was a 10-8 final in which the Tigers did pull out a dub over the Minnesota Twins. First off, you got to beat the Minnesota Twins. I mean, this is a team that is the worst team in all of the majors, in my opinion. This is a team right now that sits dead last in the AL Central, dead last in the entire MLB with a record of 10-27. That's a 27% win percentage. The Detroit Tigers have to win all of these games against this team, or it would just kind of put in perspective where this Detroit Tigers team is right now and how bad they are struggling. But you let the Minnesota Twins put up 8 runs against you? I'm a bit puzzled. That's all I'm saying. So, hey, a win is a win nonetheless. The Tigers have now won 2 straight. If you remember, coming into that series on Monday, they had just come off a third game series win over the Baltimore Orioles. So now, you know, they're starting off at least in the win column against the Twins. They have to win this series. Simple as that. You're at home. There are no excuses. I don't know how confident I am tonight, though, when you look at Mike Pelfrey on the mound. I mentioned how this brother is 0-4 on the year with an ERA well over 5. So only time will tell. Folks, phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Also want to mention the NBA right now because, wow. Oh my goodness, what a game last night between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Golden State Warriors. We know that this is a series that I believe is going to go 7 games, without a doubt, folks. And it's so entertaining when watching these two teams battle because there are superstars galore It's so intriguing. And we saw what took place in the regular season, the Golden State Warriors able to have the upper hand in the win column against the Oklahoma City Thunder. But at the same time, I mean, I always say this, and I tweeted this out last night, that in the NBA, they say that a series never really begins until the road team is able to steal a win in enemy territory. Game time, folks. This series has begun, and we're just talking about game one. The Oklahoma City Thunder stole a game at Roracle Arena last night, but I will say this, Isaac, and I was talking back and forth with my frat brother Justin about this last night. Oklahoma City almost gave that game away. They definitely almost gave that game away. I don't understand how Kevin Durant, this is a man who went through a stretch in that fourth quarter in which he went 0 of 7. He missed 7 straight buckets, crucial buckets as well. This was a very tight game in the waning minutes. He went 0 of 7. They were all jump shots. I'm sitting there saying, KD, can you please put the ball on the floor, go to the paint, try and get fouled or finish at the rim? Why must you constantly go for the simple back down, turnaround fadeaway if it's not falling? As soon as I say that, what happens? Riddle me that. Kevin Durant does the same thing and nails it on his 8th attempt, right? And I'm sitting there saying, all right, well, I guess that's the DNA of the greats, right? You know, you go 0 of 7, but hey, maybe that 8th one goes in, and that's exactly what happened. But if it was not for Russell Westbrook in the waning moments of that game, if it was not for Steven Adams and that huge rebound where Steven Adams, he maintained his composure, went to the lane and got fouled by Draymond Green. But not only does he do that, but he goes to the line and knocks down 2 huge free throws. If it wasn't for those guys, mixed in with a little bit of Deion Waiters here and there, Oklahoma City would have thrown that game away. And then on the opposite side of the Golden State Warriors, how did Golden State lose that game? It's a catch-22 with the Golden State Warriors, all right? We know that this is arguably the greatest shooting team that we have ever seen. But every once in a while, you're going to have moments. You're going to have games where it's just not falling for you, all right? And they're so good at shooting the long ball that they fall in love with it. And it leads to horrible shot selection. Just look at an average Golden State Warriors game, okay? Look at the shots that guys like Klay Thompson and Steph Curry can hit. It's not good shot selection. They're just that good that they can knock it down. But when that shot isn't falling and it's a close game and everything is on the line, you sit there and criticize it and say, I don't know about that shot. Maybe you want to rotate the ball a little bit more, make more ball movement, because when those shots are falling, it looks really, really bad. But OKC, nonetheless, they were able to go into enemy territory, get a win. I know Golden State Warriors fans are crying over the missed travel call by the referees, but I also tweeted this out last night. When in the world do they call traveling in the NBA? Traveling is a myth in the NBA, so you can't look at that Russell Westbrook moonwalk and say that, hey, that's the reason why we lost. Hell of a game. Hell of a first game, Isaac.
Yeah, and it wasn't a 3-point game either. At the end of the day, the Thunder won by 6 points. They had 2 threes over the Golden State Warriors because the Warriors did have a chance to narrow the lead to 3 points and had decent opportunity to do so. Couldn't do it. So, ultimately, that travel, if you ask me, is totally irrelevant on a
minuscule tangent. Right.
I do think that it's ridiculous that the NBA now releases these final 2-minute reports of officiating. How stupid is that? We all know if you make a mistake. We know the game just as well as some press release intern back there. We don't need somebody reviewing the game for us. If the officiating is that bad, we'll call it out. But if not, no need to embarrass the guys. No need to say that they missed a foul call when someone touched the elbow of someone on a pull-up jumper, because some of it is that ridiculous. I'm sure we'll see a release saying, yes, that was a travel, and then this whole new controversy will ignite. It's stupid. Don't do that.
And I was just about to ask, I didn't know if they had released a report saying that, yeah, we blew it, because, yeah, I don't think you need to release a report on that one. They clearly blew that call, but at the same time, I just don't believe. And the reason why they released those reports, I think, is just to soften the blow. You know what I mean?
It is.
Yeah, we blew it and we admit it and we're coming out and admitting it. They're thinking when they release something like that, they're just like, all right, we screwed up and hopefully they'll give us a pass on it. That's really why they release those reports, which really makes no sense at the end of the day, but that's why. Also, Russell Westbrook really looked like Russell West shook at one point in that game, didn't he?
Yeah.
1 for 11 to start that game, but hey, then he woke up and he just completely took over in that third quarter. I think the stat was something like he scored 19 points
yep.
in the third quarter, 19 of the team's 23, I believe, or 25, something like that. Crazy statistics. I mean, Russell Westbrook, and he's another guy. I mean, Kevin Durant, they are much the same in this, that if they are struggling, they have a very short memory. They're going to go out there. If they start the game horrid, you better believe they're going to keep on chucking it up until they start to see that basketball go through the net. And that's what makes the greats great, right? So I'm curious to get your thoughts on this series, folks. What do you think is going to happen with this series? Will Golden State come back in game two, tie this thing? Who do you got and in how many games? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And I want to read a comment from Justin here. He says, nah, OKC in three. I see where he's going there. No, that's not happening, Jay Dunn. And also, I want to throw this out before we hit our first break and invite Bob Everett to the show. Isaac, you're going to lose your mind when you hear about this. I don't know if you heard this already, but it concerns LeBron James. Have you heard about this?
Let me hear it.
Okay. LeBron James reportedly is going to sign a lifetime deal with Nike, right? Do you know where I'm going now?
I know where you're going.
He's reportedly signing a lifetime deal with Nike. Now, it was originally reported that those who knew of the deal, that financial estimates of the deal were between $400 and $5 million, right? Those are the numbers that I initially saw. But according to a new report, LeBron James's business partner, Maverick Carter, who was the mastermind behind this arrangement between LeBron James and Nike, is saying that, folks, this will be a $1 billion deal. Yes, billion with a B. Not an M here, folks. $1 billion. Let that thought marinate for this first break, because I want to propose an interesting thought when we come back. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Now, I just brought to you guys news that, again, LeBron James is reportedly going to sign a lifetime deal with Nike, an unprecedented deal worth $1 billion. I want to propose this, Isaac. If I'm LeBron James and I know my legacy is all about getting rings and winning championships, why wouldn't LeBron James look at that and say, you know what? I'm about to have $1 billion in the bank. Why don't I play for the league minimum? And you can use, because he didn't pay $20 million this year. You can use, you know, you can take money from my pool and go out there and get enough talent. You know, they already got a great team right now, as you see, with, you know, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love and company. But what if they used that extra money, if he decided to play for the league minimum, to go out there and get them a few more superstars, build a powerhouse in Cleveland, and win a few more rings? Wouldn't that make sense? The question is whether or not the NBA union would step in and say, ah, no, that's not going to go down.
Well, and that's a possibility. We've seen owners and the league collectively intervene in the past to stop actions like that. But at the same time, that's something like, and obviously not the same caliber of superstar, but David West this summer spurned an $11 million contract extension. He had a player option for another year to join the San Antonio Spurs and win a championship. I mean, he didn't win a championship, but even so, that's the same type of thinking behind it. $1 billion, though, I've got to say, it's not as ridiculous as it sounds. Derrick Rose signed a 10-year, $275 million shoe contract with Adidas. When you think of $275 for Derrick Rose for 10 years compared to LeBron for a lifetime, $1 billion, The math evens out especially, and I just want to bring this up. The new Space Jam movie is going to go off the wall. That is going to be so huge. That's the big coup for Nike.
They better not screw up Space Jam 2. That's all I'm saying. Space Jam 1 is a classic. Michael Jordan. I mean, I'm just saying they better not screw it up. That's my childhood,
They picked the right guy. LeBron's a good actor.
Yeah, he is a good actor. I must say that. He definitely is a great actor. All right, folks, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's get to our guest for today's show. Now, yesterday, folks, was the opening round of the softball classic at Rainey Park, Grand Ledge. They moved on with a win over Mason, and Eden Rapids fell to DeWitt. Right now we have on the phone the director of the Softball Classic and the chairman of the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame, our dear friend, Bob Every. Bob, how you doing, my man?
Well, I am doing well. How you doing?
Oh, it's always great to hear your voice. Now Bob, I want to start off by just talking about the history of this tournament. Bob, how long has this tourney been going on, and describe your involvement with it?
This is our 36th year of having the Softball Classic. Now, it was a tournament that was originally handled by the advisory board that ran through the City of Lansing Parks and Recreation Department. I got a call last year from Brett Kaczynski, the head of Parks and Recreation, and they said that they really felt this was more of a high school function tournament than it was a Lansing City Parks and Recreation tournament. But because they have been involved in it for so many years, they just didn't want to drop it cold, and they wanted to have somebody that they could trust to take it over that would continue to keep it growing and enhance its value to the community of Lansing. And so he asked us if we would do it, and I said, well, I'll try it this year and see how it goes. And so far, last night, it really went well. We had two great games, and expecting two more great games tonight with the semifinals tomorrow and the finals on Friday.
Now, I know, Bob, of course, your love of softball is certainly duly noted, and you can even go back to your time as a longtime head coach of the program at Lansing Community College. Where does your love for the game of softball has its roots, really?
I'm sorry, Al, you cut out on me a little bit. What was the question again?
Just where does your love of softball start, Bob?
Well, you know, I'm a sports nut. You know that, and just like you are. I mean, we can't get enough sports, and I don't know how it all started, who started weaning us out on sports, but, you know, I love all kinds of sports. You know, my Tigers, I love them, and I'm having a hard time with them now because they're not winning so many times. But I just, you know, as a kid growing up in a small town, basically, you know, all we had to do was to play sports, and my love got there. And then when you reach a point where you're no longer physically able to play a real competitive brand of sports, then I guess you either get out of it or you get into coaching. And I got into coaching, and then the throwback of coaching is you get into the administration part of it, and you do this and you do that. And so I guess it's just a migration or evolvement into the coaching after playing, and I do it just because I love it.
Oh, we can certainly tell you love it, Bob. Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with the director of the Softball Classic and chairman of the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame, the one, the only, Bob Every. Now, Bob, Grand Ledge, 22-0 on the year with the dub over Mason in round one yesterday, and, of course, Eden Rapids, they fell to DeWitt. I know that Holt is the defending champion from last season, but Grand Ledge donning a 22-0 record. Are they the clear favorite to win this thing right now?
Well, let me tell you something. Grand Ledge is a solid outfit. Pat Malloy, who coaches Grand Ledge, that you may or may not know, Al, was my assistant coach at Lansing Community College. So I would expect nothing but the best out of Pat. I mean, I can always sit here and brag a little bit and say that he got good coaching, but in reality, he probably did more to make our program a success than I did, and as did my other assistant coaches at that time, which was Jeff Keckler and Jerry Murphy. But you know, it's he's into a season here. There's no doubt about it. But I'm telling you right now, Casey Marlin and those Mason Bulldogs had him down 7-2 yesterday, and it wasn't looking really good, but. To his credit, they didn't panic. They held tight, and they kind of got the 9 or 10 runs in the one inning, and that then solidified you know, the game in my mind. But, yeah, they're into a great season, and let's just hope that they go the rest of the way. Now, the two games tonight are gonna be tough games. And, you know, that's the beauty of a single elimination format tournament, is that you got to be on your game every game you play, because there is no second chances. I expect Morris to give Holt the defending champion all they want, and I certainly think that the Langsburg-Lakewood game is going to be a tough game too. So it's just, they're just nice matchups.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun afternoon as well with the slate of games that you guys have at Rainey Park. Again, as you just mentioned, Bob, Langsburg against Lakewood at 5 p.m. and Holt against Morris in the second contest around 7 p.m. And I know, you know, and I want to propose this. I want to throw this out there in the air for you, Bob, because it's so interesting when looking at the entire landscape that is Grand Ledge baseball. I know the baseball team, manned, of course, by longtime legendary head coach Pat O'Keefe, will be probably the favorite to win the Diamond Classic later this month. And again, the softball team, as I just mentioned, 22-0. What is it about the city of Grand Ledge and success on the diamond that really isn't equaled anywhere else around Mid-Michigan?
Well, I mean, there are some good programs around Mid-Michigan, but you're absolutely right. I think the commitment of the community in Grand Ledge and the passion that the coaches have, and all coaches, I think, from the area have passion. I mean, Holt has done a good job, too, over the years. You know, it has the Okemos and has East Lansing, those types of places. But Grand Ledge is a very unique community in the sense that they start these kids in these parks and recreation programs early in their careers. You know, I'm talking about there's all sorts of public programs for these kids to get involved to at early ages. And I think that offers them an advantage, because when they get up to a certain age and get into the competitive sports, I think that their attitude and everything else probably flows a little bit better than maybe the communities that don't offer these youth sports programs like Grand Ledge.
So true. And I got to ask, Bob, how many steps behind do you think Lansing schools are when evaluating their success in baseball and softball?
Well, and you're absolutely right. I think that co-op thing makes sense. It's unfortunate that schools in Lansing or any school has to resort to that. I know that Dansville dropped their softball, and now they're over at Weberville, so they've got a co-op thing over there. Mm-hmm. But you would think with the size of the schools in Lansing that you certainly could get kids interested enough that they could be competitive. And back in the 50s and 60s, I mean, Lansing City schools ruled sports. I mean, the wrestling was unbelievable. I mean, the hardest part about winning the state championship was getting out of the districts that had Everett, Eastern, and Sexton in it. So, you know, it's unfortunate. We dropped middle school sports. When I say we, Lansing dropped middle school sports a while back. I think now they have it back at some kind of a minimum basis. But it's going to take a while to regrow it again. And, you know, we got to figure out how to keep our city kids here and not lose them to the suburbs of Grand Ledge and Holt and Okemos and those other area places like DeWitt. And I think if we can do that, then I think we can build back up and be strong once again. And I think that's good for everybody that's involved in athletics.
I certainly agree with you, Bob. And I really think that, I want to know if you agree with this statement. To really be good at this game, I mean, don't you agree that you really have to start putting, you know, the bat in the hand of kids, you know, at a really early age? I mean, around 5 or 6 years old, you can't really expect these kids to just start jumping into the game around high school and to be good at it, right?
I think you're right there, too. I think what's happened over the years, it maybe wasn't necessarily happening when you and I were younger. When I went to high school, there were seasons. You know, you played football in the fall, you played basketball. With me, I boxed in the wintertime, and then you played baseball in the spring. I think now that there's so many specialized groups out there, and they ask you to be committed on a year-round basis, I think that has some value in making sure that you're tops in your game. But I think you lose a little bit by not participating in other sports throughout the year like you did when I was a kid. But it's about a commitment. It's about, again, Grand Ledge, who starts their kids out at a very young age, getting involved in these youth programs that are being monitored and coached and mentored by good coaches out there. And it's just a migration from, you know, that young age right up to a system that it seems to be collectively all together in how they approach coaching that makes these teams tough year after year after year.
That's so true. All right, Bob, before we get you out of here, for folks out there listening that want to attend this afternoon's softball classic, how can they do so, and what's the price of admission?
All right, you know, we're over here at Jersey Giants eating, and we just loaded the field and got everything done, and we're headed back over there to finish the touches up for tonight, which has the first game starting at 5. The fee is a very cheap fee. It's $3, gets you into both games for tonight. So, and kids under 10, we allow to come in free. And like I said, the game starts at 5, then there's another game at 7. Fee's $3, parking is free. And it's great entertainment, Al. It's just great entertainment. Last night we had a few hundred people over there, and it's going to build and get bigger and better as we get into the championship game on Friday. So if you need something to do, it's going to be a nice night for the rest, and it's going to be nice the rest of the week. So come on out to Ranney Park and enjoy some women's fast pitch softball.
Yes, and I'll definitely be there later on this afternoon. I'm looking forward to it, Bob, and I would be remiss if I didn't throw this question out at you. Thoughts on the struggles of the Detroit Tigers, and should Brad Ausmus be fired?
Well, let me tell you something. I said last night, if Brad Austin lost that game last night, he would have been fired today, and that was my feelings. I am glad to see Brad act up a little bit and throw his coat over home plate and get tossed. I mean, I think the Tigers have the talent. There's no doubt about that. The pitching is a little erratic right now, but that's not to say they're not talented enough. I just think they're lacking a sense of confidence right now. Mickey and some of these other guys have got to keep performing. Castellanos is having a great year. There's no doubt about that. We've got to get Justin Upton going. There's no doubt when you pay that kind of money out that a guy has to perform. I think if we can get those things going, but, you know, for me, I think it boils down to the manager. The manager has to instill in them the passion to win, the fire to win. And I think Brad has got to be a little bit more animated with those guys, quite honestly. You know, I mean, I love Sparky Anderson. And, you know, he needs to have a Sparky Anderson-type attitude. And I believe if he does that with the talent that he has, the Tigers still can salvage this season and get into the playoffs.
What type of a message do you think Brad sent with that fourth inning tirade, really having the back of Nick Castellanos and getting ejected? What do you think that what's the message that he wanted to send?
Well, I think the message that he wanted to send was, listen, I got your back, you got my back. Doggone it, guys. We're in this thing together, and we're going to live as a team, and we're going to die as a team. But if I see something I feel that's being unfair towards one of my ballplayers, I'm going to show you that I care enough about you to go to bat for you and go to fight for you. It's like somebody picking on your little brother. You know, you stand up for your little brother. And I just think that baseball is a game of emotions. It's a game of talent. It's a game of luck. And I think if any one of those ingredients are gone for any length of time, the team suffers. And I honestly think Brad is too laid back. I think he has to instill into his players some passion for the game. And I think that they see in him, if when he does things like this, I mean, you don't go out and act like a raving idiot, but doggone it, if you know you're being mistreated, you stand up and speak up for yourself. And I think if Brad does a little bit more of that, the players will kind of get the idea, and they might get into a thing where the rest of the season could be a very exciting season for the Detroit Tigers.
My man, Bob Every, director of the Softball Classic and chairman of the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame. Bob, we definitely have to get you on throughout the summer months, especially as the date comes closer and closer to July 28th, which will be yet another year of the ceremony for your Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame. Would you mind coming back on around that time?
No, Al, you know what? I enjoy talking to you any chance I get. So you call me anytime you feel you want me on. It'd be a pleasure for me to be on.
Bob, thank you so much. Hey,
take care, Al.
Have a good time this afternoon.
Yeah. All right, thanks, buddy. Bye.
All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on this Tuesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports by chatting about a new addition to the Michigan State football team. And also, Tickle Tuesday is on tap. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We do have a bit of breaking news to bring to you all. This as of around, 1:40 p.m.? So during the interview in our chat with Bob Every, the Atlanta Braves have now fired manager Freddie Gonzalez. The Braves dropped to an MLB worst 9-28. So if there's any team worse than the Minnesota Twins, it's definitely the Atlanta Braves. 9-28 after an 8-5 loss to the Pittsburgh Pirates on Monday night. They haven't won consecutive games over a 5-19 span, during which they've averaged 2.7 runs and eight home runs. Yeah, that's pretty sad. Four MLB players have more homers this season than the Braves, who have a total of just 11. That's pretty bad. So the writing was certainly on the wall for Gonzalez. So again, the Atlanta Braves have fired manager Gonzalez after a 9-28 start. Freddie Gonzalez is now out. All right, well, less than 10 minutes left in today's show. The NBA draft lottery is tonight. Isaac and your New Orleans Pelicans, they have a 6.3% chance of possibly getting that top pick. What do you think? You confident? Do you have like a superstitious thing? Are you wearing a certain cap, or are you wearing a Pelicans hat like
you're
I am
wearing
right
the
now?
Cap. But right. No, I don't have anything that I'll be doing for tonight. If the Pelicans obviously could get the first or second pick, either Ingram or Simmons, I think that's the big get in the draft. So one or two, I wouldn't care. I kind of, and this is heresy in New Orleans, of course, I kind of want the T-Wolves to get the first pick, just because of the team that they're building for the future. Mm-hmm. They are actually one place above the lottery than the Pelicans. They're number 5. So if the Timberwolves were to somehow manage to get that pick, or the Boston Celtics, those are the two most dangerous teams, both who have potential to be excellent in the future, and both have a potential at number 1 or 2.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. So, yeah, the Sixers have the highest, chance. They're at the number 1 pick at 25%, then the Lakers and the Celtics, the Suns, then the Timberwolves, your Pelicans, and then the Denver Nuggets. So we'll see what pans out. Again, 8 p.m. And I was doing some research, and I saw, and it kind of ties into this magic moment when I watched that documentary on the start of the Orlando Magic franchise in the NBA. And, I believe the Magic in 1993, they had like something like a 1.7% chance at getting the number 1 pick. And that's the biggest draw of luck ever in the NBA draft lottery. They got the number 1 pick. And that's when I believe they took Anfernee Penny Hardaway after they had Shaquille O'Neal with the squad as well. So they got very, very lucky. But man, oh man, that talk about luck. You have a 1% chance and you get the number 1 pick. Anything can happen, though. That's what makes the draft lottery pretty fun to watch.
Well, and a cool thing about the lottery, too, is that I'm trying to remember how many years exactly, but I think over 6 since the number 1 lucky team, or the team with the best chance of getting the number 1 overall pick in mm-hmm. that year, this year it would be the 76ers, has not gotten it. So time and time again, it's been an upset sort of in the lottery, and I'd love to see that again. The poor 76ers, boy, they are just bad, oh so bad, and they can't get the number 1 pick to save their lives.
No, they cannot. So we'll see what pans out tonight. Again, that will take place at 8 p.m. on ESPN. Also want to mention, Michigan State football head coach Mark D'Antonio announced yesterday that defensive tackle Kevin Williams out of Ohio has signed a valid Big Ten tender and will join the Spartan program for the upcoming 2016 season. Williams has spent the past 5 years with Nebraska. He's 6'2", 275 pounds. He played in 23 games for the Huskers, including 4 starts during the 2012 season, 5 games, 2014, 10 games, 2015, 8 games. He recorded 27 tackles, 10 for losses, which totaled 37 yards and 3 sacks. I like this move because we know that the Spartans are losing a ton, especially on the offensive and defensive lines, respectively. The big loss concerning Shalik Calhoun, who's now taking his talents to the NFL. I like this move. They're trying to find girth wherever they can get it, Isaac.
Well, you lose Shalik, and of course that's the obvious miss, but also Joel Heath.
Yes,
that's
Joel,
a big
right.
loss there, too. And then the two, not favorites, but two guys who you expected to be in that two-deep line defensively, Craig Evans and Montez Sweat, both also out the door. So This Barnes were in dire need of depth. They got it here. Kevin Williams has had some trouble with injuries, but he brings experience. He's a good wrap-up man. He's a great addition for this team.
Yeah, and speaking of Joel Heath, I want to throw out a congratulations to Mr. Joel Heath because he has just gotten married to a friend of mine, a really good friend of mine in college, whose sister married Joel, and her sister goes to Michigan State right now. So congratulations to Joel, and we wish them luck. I saw that, and I had to do a double take. Everybody's getting married. Now I'm getting that age, Isaac, where everyone around me is either getting engaged or jumping that broom. I feel old, even though I'm only 25, but I feel old anytime I see something like that pop on my Facebook page. And then my mom's like, when are you going to make the move? I'm like, Mom.
When are you going to make the move?
Tuesday, baby. This is where we look at the week that is in the sporting world and bringing you some of the funniest moments coming out of the sports world. We love to break the monotony that is the work week with this segment. Here we go.
Gentlemen. In exactly 5 days, we will be $100 billion richer.
That alone just tickles you, doesn't it? That is best intro that we have, I think. But, you know, I only have one here. This old Matt Barnes situation is so comical to me, Isaac. Again, Matt Barnes is a player in the NBA right now. And I guess TMZ Sports, they flagged Matt Barnes down, right? And Matt Barnes was asked who he'd rather fight, Derek Fisher, who seems to be dating his ex-wife right now, or Colin Kaepernick. Now, I don't really know the beef that he has with Colin Kaepernick.
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, they kind of just threw it out there, and his answer was, I'll blank both of them up. So, yeah, he was not happy when he was asked that question. To read straight from TMZ right here, as previously reported, Barnes has had animosity toward the 49ers quarterback for years, stemming from a situation where Matt felt disrespected by Colin. Clearly, there's still strong feelings. By the way, we also asked Matt if OKC Thunder star Steven Adams should get a pass for calling the Warriors quick little monkeys on Monday in his postgame show. Matt's all about forgiveness on this one, explaining why he believes the new Zealander didn't mean any harm. I saw that, and Steven Adams has come out and apologized about that.
That's a funny enough comment as it is. I think being foreign, you don't necessarily understand the implication of monkeys.
Right.
At the same time, though, you've got to be a little smarter than that. But, yeah, Matt Barnes saying, I'll bleep someone up, is about as nice as it gets from Matt Barnes, it seems.
You can say that again.
I want to rewind real quick to Philip Wellman, a former minor league manager who had the best baseball tirade of all time, going off on the ump and throwing the fake grenade, burying himself under the baseball base. It was just good stuff. So that's all I have for you.
That's epic. You got to check that out. YouTube that one. That's fantastic stuff. Folks, we'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow. As always, have a great afternoon and be easy, people.